Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Talking Some Sense. And today, I'm joined by Chris Sinclair.
Hello.
And I'm also joined by Alex Longua.
Bonjour.
How are you guys doing today?
Doing well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. What about you, Alex?
Oh, I can't complain. Well, I can complain a little bit about the game, but I'm doing pretty good. Yeah,
that's true. For those listening, we're recording this moments after the Ottawa Senators absolutely destroyed themselves against the LA Kings. It sucked. But we'll talk about that a little bit more later. We got a lot to talk about today, right?
Yes, we do.
So we're going to start off with some fun Sens fact of the day, like this day in Senators history type of thing. We're going to break down some news. We're going to talk about Shane Pinto. We're going to talk about Evgeny Dadonov. We're going to talk about Pierre Dorion. We're going to talk about some guys who could possibly replace him. Then we're going to talk about some general hockey news. We're going to bring up the unfortunate accident that involved Adam Johnson. We're going to talk about neck protection throughout the NHL and hockey leagues throughout the world. And then we're going to end off by talking about the abysmal Ottawa Senators loss against the LA Kings. Are you guys ready to start?
Couldn't be more ready.
I am ready to go.
All right. Let's start off today with talking about the Ottawa Senators Day in Hockey History. I kind of butchered that title, but it's all right. I'm not going to stop now. So today, when we're recording, is Thursday, November 2nd. But when we will be hearing this, it will be Friday, November 3rd. So I guess yesterday in Senators history, the Ottawa Senators acquired Mike Condon from the Pittsburgh Penguins in exchange for a fifth-round pick in 2017, which ended up being Jan Drozd. I probably butchered that name, but that's a name I've never heard before. So, and with the Ottawa Senators, Mike Condon played in three seasons, and he amassed a record of 24, 33, and 11. The most notable season that he played for the Ottawa Senators was the 2016-17 year, where he had to step up as the temporary starter when Daniel Alfredsson took some time away to be with his family while his wife was battling cancer.
Craig
this Anderson. Time, yeah, sorry, did I butcher his name?
He said Daniel Alfredsson.
Why did I say Daniel Alfredsson? My goodness. Oh, whatever, we'll leave it in. I'm sorry, it's been a long day.
In all fairness, he's always top of mind when it comes to us Ottawa Senators fans. So
this is true.
You Ottawa Senators, you think of Daniel Alfredsson. I totally get that, so no yeah, worries.
This is true.
I'll be thinking of him a little bit more now lately, if you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Well, since he's an opening position somewhere. Yeah. But anyways.
Yeah, the point is he had to step up when Anderson had to take some time away, and he did that fantastically when he played 26 games in a row, which is still a modern-day NHL record. I say modern-day because he's not Glenn Hall, and nobody's going to beat Glenn Hall's record. Was it 502 or 504?
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
Yeah, something like that, but no NHL goalie's ever going to do that. But I think in the last 30 years, Mike Condon's the closest who's gotten to it. And that's 26 games in a row, which is just ridiculous. He won 19 games, lost 14, and lost 6 in overtime, which doesn't really look like the best record if you think about it, but it was enough to get the Senators in the playoffs, and it's exactly what he was able to do. He amassed a .914 save percentage and a goals against average of .250. What do you guys remember about Mike Condon? Throw it over to you, Chris, first.
Good. I would say I remember him. I remember not knowing anything about him before he arrived here. And he actually played finishing with a .914 save percentage. Sure, the goals against were a little bit higher at 2.5, but that's a good save percentage. He stepped in when he wasn't expected to step in at that level. You know what? I'm fine with it. I loved it. Obviously it didn't work out long-term as much as everyone wanted it to, but he stepped in when he didn't need to, or when he wasn't expected to. I'm down. It was great. And for a fifth round pick who is someone I've never heard of, you know what? Do it. Yeah, I'm down.
Yeah. For a first round pick, can't really complain. He came in, stood his ground, played the solid hockey for us, and I don't really like I obviously remember the Mike Connan years, but it kind of not. It feels so long ago. Like us Sens fans have been through so much. It just I forget what it feels like to win. I'm sorry. I just had it's just,
yeah.
But Mike Connan was able to at least. Last thing I remember is him getting what.
What happened? You're always the most optimistic of the bunch,
man. let me tell you a little bit something about losing a first round pick.
Oh, that's true. That sucks. Yeah, we'll bring that up a little later. But
yeah. But yeah, Mike Connan for a fifth round pick was, I think, great asset management. Like, he came in, he wasn't expected to be really like a NHL all star by any means. He was more just kind of a stopgap, and he did exactly what he had to do. Got to the playoffs and. Russia's history.
Yeah. But when it comes to Mike Condon, he was traded for it was around the same time. It was just before Andrew Hammond was traded to the the year before. Never mind. Andrew Hammond was still on the Ottawa Senators that year. So Andrew Hammond had started the year as the backup and he was playing like dog crap. So we needed a backup in the back. We needed an upgrade in the backup net. So Doran was able to trade for Mike Condon, who just a year before played in 55 games for the Montreal Canadiens. Do you remember that at all? Yeah. So in Montreal, this is the year that Carey Price injured himself after the first 9 games. Carey Price won 9 games in a row with the Montreal Canadiens and went down to injury. And that was the end of his season there. And that was the unofficial beginning of Montreal's fall from grace. So Mike Condon played in 55 games. He won 25, lost 25. So he won 21, lost 25, and OT 6. So there, it was his first ever time playing in NHL, and he was thrown immediately into a starting role. Did as good as he could. Team sucked, missed the playoffs. Next year, he went to the Pittsburgh Penguins, and then he came to Ottawa in that trade. So it's just always fun to look back on those little moments of history. And that's all I'm really going to say on that.
Sure. Right? Yep.
Does anybody have anything else to add before we jump out into something else?
Just a quick piece. It always seems like Ottawa comes out on top of these smaller goalie trades. They always seem to find a goalie that somehow does their job. Anders Nielsen, Mike Condon, Andrew Hammond, like they just seem to find goalies for very cheap when they need to, because we've had so many goalie injuries and we've probably went through a carousel of them. So
arguably also Anderson, who, you know, it wasn't playing well in Colorado. Yeah. And we ended up getting him for Elliott, who wasn't playing well for us, obviously went on to a much better career outside of Ottawa. But yeah. I would say that's probably a perfect example of exactly what you're saying, Alex, right? Like the fact that we were able to acquire him at his lowest, and he's admitted that we acquired him at his lowest, and then he moved on and he's now become the franchise leader in so many different categories. That's a perfect example of exactly what you're saying. So yeah, absolutely. Like, exactly. You know, we may be sometimes a goalie graveyard, but every once in a while, right out of the park.
Yeah, yep. Exactly. Well, if you want to be able to predict the next Ottawa Senators starting goalie, head on over to DraftKings. The NFL season is going on strong, and DraftKings Sportsbook is hooking new customers up with an offer that's even stronger. Bet $5, just $5 on any game this week to score $200 instantly in bonus bets. And DraftKings isn't stopping there. All customers can take advantage of a sweetener offer every game day this October. I know I put a couple bucks in the Ottawa Senators game tonight. I lost, but that's okay. I bet $2.50 I was going to lose that. I was going to make a bit more. Always be able to bet what you're willing to lose. So get in on the game day greatness now. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code THPN. New customers can score $200 instantly in bonus bets when you bet $5 on the NFL. That's code THPN, only on DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. The crown is yours. Got a gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resorts, licensee partner Golden Nugget Lake Charles Casino Resorts, LA 21 plus. Age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 160 hours after issuance. See sportsbooks.draftkings.com/football for terms of eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gambling resources. Now that we've got that out of the way, paying the bills here, we're going to talk about the Ottawa Senators week from hell. How should we start this off? Should we start off with Shane Pinto? Should we start it off with them getting down and off? How should we start it? What do you guys think?
I think we go in order of events. I think we start off with Shane, Dadanoff, and then the big kahuna at the end.
Yeah.
Oh, the big kahuna. All right. I'm good with that.
I'm referring to him as that now. Big kahuna. I'm not even going to say his name.
The big kahuna. All right. Let's talk about Shane Pinto. Recently, I was at some point last week, I forget the day exactly, but last week, Shane Pinto was suspended for 41 games for sports gambling. So what happened there is there's obviously the NHL did an investigation not too long before the training camp started. And that was partly why Shane Pinto was not signed to a contract. The NHL has said that he has not bet on NHL games. He's obviously still not signed to an NHL contract. Probably won't be. He's not eligible to play in the NHL type. It was early January. I'm going to say January 10th, but the exact date I'm missing. I believe it's against the Philadelphia Flyers. He's eligible to return. Don't know exactly when that's going to happen because still he's not signed to a contract. So per insiders like Brent Wallace and other folks like that on Elliot Friedman, Jeff Merrick, all the people who know more about the situation than we do, they're all saying that he did not get bet himself. More so, it was more likely that he bet by proxy. So this means that someone else used his app most likely. So Shane Pinto probably just wanted to throw a couple shekels on something, but couldn't because of wherever he was in the world. And one of his friends probably logged on to his app, and then the app was able to flag where you are. And obviously Shane Pinto was not there. So that's probably what ended up happening and why the NHL got dinged and let the NHL know that this is going on. What are your thoughts on this? I'll throw this to you, Chris, first.
Yeah, obviously we were all wondering what was happening, why he wasn't signed, what was going on in that space. This was not anything anyone was expecting. And I know that Ann Lauer mentioned this as well, but he was really proud of the fact that the organization managed to keep this under wraps for as long as they did. Frustrating that the team didn't know about this, or the organization didn't know this about this until just before training camp. So the whole thing started in early summer and then managed to go through the entire summer before training camp, before anyone found out about it. Obviously it sucks. There's no better way to say it. Pinto being arguably a middle six forward who had a really strong rookie season last season. He's an important part of this team, and this sucks, especially being gone for 41 games. Glad that it's not the full season, which apparently is rumored to be what the NHL wanted originally. So it's not a full season, and it means that when he does sign, he doesn't have a lot of leverage in terms of what that next contract looks like. But this sucks. There are a lot of superlatives that we could use. It sucks. That's the end of the kind of how I feel about that. Yeah, this is tough.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems like the Sens can't just buy a break right now. Unfortunate news. Unfortunately, what he did was probably against the rules in some sort of way. And I'm not speculating or don't know anything for sure, but Ann Lauer did say that he will be getting some help and that the organization will support him. So everybody should, instead of just kind of trashing him or making fun of him, they should be getting behind. Jake just read a gambling ad. Gamble responsibly, and if you need help, there's a helpline there. So wishing Shane recovery, I could say. And hopefully he can be back in the lineup soon and we can get him signed and yeah, I don't really know. I can't really speak too much on it because I don't know exactly what happened. But the 41 games sucks. It sounds like he said the NHL wanted to give him a full season, but the fact that they ignored it to 41 games, I guess, is a good thing for us. But yeah, I mean, it's very disappointing. So hopefully we get some good news soon.
Yeah, Alex, that's a really good point. I think that it's important for us to all acknowledge that at the end of the day, yeah, it sucks for the team. It sucks for us as fans. But at the end of the day, like, as long as he's getting the support that he needs, from the organization, and it definitely sounds like the organization is there to support him and the players are behind him. I think that, yeah, you're right. At the end of the day, like, he's going to get that support. He's going to understand. He's going to learn from this. And he's going to come back stronger, and we're going to have a great player, continued great player moving forward. I think that's important to acknowledge. So great job.
Exactly. You guys hit the nail on the head. It's good that the organization is behind Pinto's back. He's a great kid who just made an honest mistake is what it sounds like.
Yeah.
So we'll take that to move on to the next domino that fell this past week for the Ottawa Senators, and that is Evgeny Dadonov. So, on July 28th, 2021, the Ottawa Senators let's take this back beforehand. In the 2020 offseason, the Ottawa Senators signed Evgeny Dadonov to a 3-year contract with an annual average value of around $5 million. This contract included a 10-team no-trade list team, and for this list to come into effect, he had to submit 10 teams each year by a specific date. So that's what his clause was, and the exact details of that clause were not made public for quite a while. We just knew it was a 10-team no trade list. After 1 year in Ottawa, it was decided that he was not a good fit in the team. For whatever reason, he just had a bad year, which happens. Players don't always fit in new teams. A fit on paper doesn't necessarily mean it'll fit on the ice. So obviously he was traded away to the Vegas Golden Knights in exchange for Nick Holden and a 2022 third-round pick. This third-round pick was then sent to the Vancouver Canucks in exchange for Travis Hamonic. So I guess you could say that this trade tree is still alive. That pick was used to pick Elias Pettersson, a defenseman, who has not played any NHL games yet. Nick Holden was great in Ottawa for 1 year. He was a kind of a good-ish top four defenseman on a rebuilding team. He lasted that in a year. In his second year, he kind of fell down to earth, but that's what happens when you start getting to that near end of your NHL career. He was good in Ottawa. Travis Hamonic has been serviceable as well. Dadonov has jumped around the league a bit more. So at some point, I believe it was at the 2022 trade deadline, the Vegas Golden Knights tried trading Dadonov to the Anaheim Ducks in exchange for, I think it was Shea Weber's contract. Oh, no, it was Ryan Kessler's contract and a couple other pieces. But that trade is voted because Dadonov said that the Anaheim Ducks run his no-trade clause. Vegas was surprised about this because allegedly what happened was when Ottawa traded Dadonov to the Vegas Golden Knights, Doran allegedly has said that the no trade list was void because he had not submitted a team to 10 teams early enough. Later on, it was basically revealed that at that time, the trade was just canceled and no teams were going to get any discipline. Fast forward a year and a half later, or whatever the case may be at this point, Ottawa Senators are now losing a first round draft pick. Which seems to be a massive, massive penalty. But at the end of the day, what happened was if the reports are true, it was avoidable 100%, and Pierre Dorion lied to try to get rid of a bad contract. I get why he did this, but it's so bush league to do something like that, man. It makes a clown of the NHL. It makes a clown of the Ottawa Senators. It makes a clown of the Vegas Golden Knights. And the Vegas Golden Knights just wanted to show to the world that, hey, this was not on us. So that's why a grievance was filed, and it's led to a lot of other things that have happened. What are your guys' take on this whole situation? I'll throw it to Alex first.
Well, before I start, is this a kid's episode, or can I say some curse words? Or
keep it light.
Can I say it like BS or?
Absolutely. Just
okay. Well, it's bullshit. So it's absolute bullshit what happened. I mean, you can blame the NHL, you can blame Peridorin, you can blame Vegas. All around, it's just Bush League, like you said, Jake. Like, from all aspects of it, it's Bush League on Pierre Dorian's part for that negligence that embarrassed the team in the NHL. It's Bush League on Vegas for beating this dead horse just so they can prove a point. It's Bush League on the NHL that it took so long to get this done, and then it's coming up almost 2 years later. It's just Bush League all around. It's just absolutely ridiculous. And when the trade happened, you know, it came out saying the NHL said there's no teams at fault. It was just error and whatnot, but I don't know exactly why it got brought up. And the fact that Ann Lauer didn't even know about it while he was trying to purchase the team is absolutely like that Bush League. Like, that's bullshit. Like, a first round pick to me is like a couple million dollars in your organization. If you think about it, like, it's like an employee or an accountant screwing up and costing an organization a couple million dollars because the investment they put in these players is massive, right? Like, a first round pick is going to cost an organization millions of dollars down the line. So in revenue as well, like, people are going to come and pay them. So it's all around. It's Pierre Dorian screw up. It's the NHL screw up. I got to be careful what I say about Vegas here, but they're really not looking too good in my books at this point. I'm going to stop there because I can keep going. But I disagree completely with the penalty. I think Pierre Dorian losing his job is more than enough. Maybe the sender should have got fined or something like that. But I mean, like, I guess still the NHL sees it. Well, you can choose one of the three first round picks you get, but like, the fact that the Chicago Blackhawks got a little slap on the wrist. And, you know, like, this seems like the most harsh penalty I've seen the NHL give out to any team in a long time, besides the Devils and the Kovalchuk situation. But even then, that got appealed and they got their first round pick back. Well, not really. Like, I got moved to the end of the first, so it wasn't a high first. But either way, like, this is, it's not really that big of a blunder compared to some other things that have happened in the league. And again, the NHL strikes again, which you don't know what the rules are. You think it applies. You think you know what a rule is, and then you think you know what the punishment is, and something else happens, and it's whatnot. Like, Vegas, I mean, the due diligence should be done on Dorian's part for filing the no trade clause. Vegas had Dadonov for 8 months throughout the season. You think they would have had some sort of no trade clause? You think it's, you know what I mean? Like, And then for the NHL to take this long and then take a whole year of investigating, like, what is going on right now? Like, it's just the Ottawa Senators. I swear, if this happened to any other team, it'd be fine. But I don't know. Maybe we should change our name or our colors or something just to get away from the Melnick curse or whatever we want to call this now. But it's, yeah. Anyways, I got to stop because I can keep going.
All good. Let's move it on over to Chris now. What are your thoughts on this?
I think it's, first of all, Alex, I'm just going to give you a round of applause for that. Cause that's, I think, how a number of us, yep. Thank you. A number of us are feeling at the end of the day, sure. You know, it comes down to Pierre Dorian. Ultimately the buck stops with him. He should have known what was happening, whether it was McTavish, whether it was, you know, whomever in the organization connected with Vegas. Like, it ultimately comes down to Pierre Dorian. But at the end of the day, I agree with you, Alex. It should have been a fine and a slap on the wrist. And then the slap on the wrist transpires now to getting fired. I think that, and we can get into that in a moment, but I think that makes sense. But it should have been a fine. A first round draft pick for something that happened 18 months ago or whatever, 2 years ago. I'm not good at math. I'm not a math guy. I just play one on TV. However long ago that was, 2021, at the end of the day, like, that happened in 2021. There was an investigation. They said no. Vegas pushed it. They kept pushing it, wanted their pound of flesh, as everyone's saying, pound of flesh. And here we are now, where if Vegas literally is coming off the Stanley Cup, they won the Stanley Cup, and now they also have ultimately made it so that Ottawa loses their first round pick. So, like, they end up, they keep winning, and we keep losing. And to your point, that's what we're used to, but we shouldn't be used to that anymore. And here we are, we just like, we cannot win. We cannot get ahead where it's like, this doesn't need to be a first round pick. This means a fine. Dorian's held accountable. He's fired. End of discussion.
Yeah. I mean, and like at the end of the day, and again, I'm picking on Vegas here, but Vegas got Dadan off because they had players on LTIR. Then the players from LTIR came back and put them in cap hell, and they had to move Dadan off to get him out of cap hell. That's their own doing. That's not like the fact that, like, I don't know. It's at the end of the day, it falls on Pierre Dorion and the Ottawa Senators. I will agree with that. It's their fault for not doing it, but the fact that Vegas keeps beating this dead horse and just wants to go out and be like, see, we're not as bad as an organization as everybody thinks we are, and just attack, like, I don't know. I just don't like how it all transpired. This is not me saying Ottawa like doesn't deserve to get punished. They do. Pierre Dorion, whoever it was, whether it was, like you said, McTavish or Pierre Dorion, they messed up. They didn't do they didn't follow the protocols. They didn't submit the list. Whatever. But like, the fact that this is dragged on this long is absolutely ridiculous. There's far more serious issues the NHL needs to look at right now than a player not wanting to go to play for California because he was a cap dump. Like, Dadanoff's still in the league. He's playing for Dallas. He still has a career. It's not like there's so much more serious issues the NHL needs to look at than waste their time with this. So, anyways, I'm leaving it at that. Jake, you can go for it.
But I just want to chime in just for one more second and just say, Alex, I think it's a great to again highlight that this. Sure, it sucks that the Knights kept pursuing this and all that sort of stuff, and the NHL. There, it doesn't seem to make sense as to what is a rule or what isn't. There's some inconsistencies there. At the end of the day, if this does, and Lauer said in his presser, it falls on the Ottawa, the Senators organization. They did do something wrong here. They didn't, they misled. They are now being held accountable. It's just the degree in which they're being held accountable, I'm not comfortable with. They should have been fine. They shouldn't have to lose a draft pick, but they should be held accountable. It's just the degree in which they're being held accountable is my issue. Yes.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that.
Yeah.
I'm in agreement, and I'm just going to jump in here really quickly to say I agree with you completely, Chris. The Ottawa Senators are in the wrong for the Dadanoff debacle, but I don't agree with the punishment. But I'm just going to try to play devil's advocate just for a second here, just to try to break down a couple things here. If you look at the Arizona Coyotes situation, they lost a first-round pick and a second-round pick for tampering with prospects a couple of years ago, and John Chyka inevitably lost his job for all that stuff. Or not exactly he lost his job. Like, the whole situation resulted in John Chyka resigning and trying to go elsewhere. That was blocked by the league. But basically what it sounds like is I believe the league is trying to set a precedent for things that immediately impact on-ice projects, such as lying in a trade or tampering with prospects that the NHL considers worthy of losing draft picks.
It really impacted the Vegas Golden Knights 2 years ago, but not like 2 years ago.
I agree. It's stupid. It really is stupid. I'm just trying to break down what I think their logic is. So what I think the NHL's logic is, something that could immediately impact the NHL's day-to-day operations on the ice, like the Dadanoff lie or the tampering or whatever the case may be, whenever it's inevitably happens again, and someone loses a draft pick. That's worth a draft pick. But something that doesn't, quote unquote, I'm doing the quote signs for people who aren't watching, for stuff that doesn't impact day-to-day operations like the Chicago Blackhawks and this whole Brad Aldrich issue. That's warranting of a fine, which I think is bananas. But I think that's what the NHL's logic is here. Their logic is wrong, but that's what their logic is. And it's just disappointing to see a team be literally basically rewarded for such a horrible situation that was covered up for 10 years ago when the Ottawa Senators lied about a trade. Yeah, they were in the wrong for that. But one punishment should have been a lot higher, and it's not the Senators. You know, that's
my thoughts. I mean, like, by no means are we comparing what the Chicago Blackhawks did to the Ottawa Senators, but there has to be a precedent. There has to be a precedent. Like, the fact that the Chicago Blackhawks didn't lose a first round pick and ended up with Connor Bedard, and people are saying, oh, well, no one's left in the organization that messed this up. Well, guess what? No one's left in the Ottawa Senators organization that messed this one up either. The owner's gone. Like, it's it's the same thing. Like, why is, like Ann Lauer said, why did I inherit this? I have no idea. Like,
yeah. And I would say that to your point, Alex, like you shouldn't be and I did the same thing where comparing the Blackhawks to what's happening with Ottawa. Ottawa shouldn't have been the precedent. Right now, Ottawa is the precedent, or like arguably to you mentioned earlier with Kovalchuk with the Devils, but right now the most recent precedent is Ottawa. When really the most recent precedent should be the Blackhawks, not Ottawa. Right. And that's where everyone's hung up on, is that now once again Ottawa is the forefront, where in all the wrong kinds of ways, where now we're defining what is true punishment. Well, look at what Ottawa did, and now look at that's how we're going to compare everything, rather than look at what the Blackhawks did and covered up everything, and now we have to measure every assessment against that sort of, or every judgment against that sort of level.
Yeah. And I mean, like the fine the Blackhawks got, again, I can't compare, but it's like they have one of the richest owners in the league. It's nothing to them. Where, you know, Ottawa had, like, I just don't understand where the NHL's come from. It's like it's like a goaltender interference call. You have no idea if it's going to be if it's a penalty, if it's not. Like, you just don't know what the rules are anymore. And that's, I think, the frustrating part. Like, there hasn't been a precedent that's set in the past. So I get the NHL's trying to set a precedent for this, but it's like, I don't know. I just feel like it's too late. This ship has already sailed. Like, if Pierre Dorion lost his job, Pierre Dorion should have been fined, or Ottawa should have been fined. End of story. Move on. I get it. I get what the NHL is trying to do. It's just super frustrating. It seems to happen to us all the time.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. On that note, let's move on to the next matter at hand. We're going to talk another ad read here. We're going to be talking about a new sponsor for us at the Talking Some Sense podcast. We'll be talking about Raycon. So you know what? It might be a little too early to start decorating for holidays, but never is it too early to start your holiday shopping. Why not take care of it now before the crowds and packed calendars make shopping a total nightmare? Especially when you can get some of the best deals on season well before Black Friday. You can shop Raycon products right now and save up to 50% off because their early Black Friday sale is going on right now. You've heard me talk about Raycon's products before. Well, you haven't, but I will be starting soon. Raycon's first made a name for themselves in the audio space with products like their everyday earbuds, known for delivering high quality and thoughtful features like a 32-hour battery life and a perfect in-ear fit for all-day wear and lasting comfort. In this past year, they expanded the entire business with the introduction of Raycon Home and Raycon Power Tech. Their 5-star reviewed Magic 180 cable allows you to charge iOS, micro USB, and Type-C devices 8 times faster with 100-watt power delivery. Their faucet filter ultra filters the water in your tap against chlorine and heavy metals. It's a must-have for ensuring the water you use to wash your face and brush your teeth is, you know, actually clean. Raycon is known for delivering high quality and thoughtful features at half the price of premium tech brands. It's no wonder their products have racked up tens of thousands of 5-star reviews. To get everyone in the holiday shopping spirit just a little early, Raycon is currently offering 20% off their entire site with select products up to 50% off. Beat the crowds and save now. Trust me, you do not want to miss out on Raycon's early Black Friday sale. Hurry now to buy Raycon. Hurry now to buy Raycon.com/GHPN to get 20% off or 50% off. It depends on what you buy site wide. That's buyraycon.com/GHPN to score up to 50% off Raycon products. Buyraycon.com/GHPN.
I will say, though, I actually just yesterday, so November 1st, day after Halloween, Christmas decorations are up. So it is never really too early to put up Christmas decorations, and never too early to get ahead of all those long Christmas lines. So Raycon, go snag some.
I guess.
Raycon.
Yeah. Raycon. Yeah.
I don't think somebody's so passionate about Black Friday, by the way.
Yeah. I'm not a big fan of all the Christmas decorations up on November 1st, but that's just me. I'm an old
man. That's fine. You haven't seen my place. My place, it looks magical. It looks magical. And I already have some gifts under the tree.
Is that an invite?
Awesome.
Is it some Raycons under the tree?
Raycons, man. Raycons.
There we go.
Raycons everywhere.
Love it. Back to the topic at hand, though. We earlier mentioned Pierre Dorion was recently let go by the Ottawa Senators. This was announced 2 days ago when you'll be hearing this on Wednesday, November 1st. There was a press conference call at 3:15 p.m. Eastern, and Pierre Dorion has been let go by the Ottawa Senators. It was decided in conjunction between Michael Andlauer and Steve Staios. It was kind of they both agreed that it was time to move on based on all of the, I'll call it dysfunction that's been going on. And Steve Staios will be taking over interim general manager capacities while the team begins its search for a general manager. I don't think the search will start today. I don't think it'll start tomorrow. I think they're going to wait till probably after the Sweden trip. But let's take a look at a couple candidates. First off,
Let's get our thoughts on the Pierre Dorion firing first.
That's fair. That's
before we jump into that. I was waiting.
Very good point. I'll let you start there, Alex, because you're so into it right now.
Well, first of all, while Chris over there was putting up his decorations on November 1st, Pierre Dorion was getting fired. So while Chris was singing Christmas songs and being happy and pure joy, Dorion was told over dinner that he was no longer part of the organization. Yeah. So anyways, I mean, this didn't really come as a shocker, to be honest. Once you've seen the Shane Pinto news, then you've seen the first round pick news, and Lauer been preaching accountability since he took over day one. And I mean, it falls on Pierre Dorion. He needs to be accountable for his actions, and he was. He got let go. I don't necessarily think this is a performance issue at all. I don't think that's really based on that. I do think he was getting replaced at the end of the season regardless. I think he was kind of just there while they transitioned and figure it out. But I think this just kind of, and I was like, I just want a clean house, fresh start. He's so used to being best of class. I know we chatted about the other teams he owns. I can't say them, but I'll say them. I don't even care. Brantford and Hamilton, the Bulldogs, they were the best class in best in class in the OHL. And he's featured that multiple times. He went out and got Matt Nichol, one of the best strength and conditioning. I think it's strength and conditioning, right? Yeah, strength and conditioning coaches out there. He's all about best in class, and this was an absolute embarrassment. Oh,
well, if you want to be precise, his title is director of player health, but yeah, his job is strength and conditioning.
Okay, but and Pierre Dorion made this a joke. Like it was an embarrassment to the league. It was an embarrassment to Andlauer. He is not someone that will stand for that. So it's only my he's going to want to put his own guys in place now and kind of roll with it. And you know, it's. I told my friend this. I compare it, and I told you guys, if I compare this to like an accountant messing up. If an accountant messes up a $1 million asset, he's going to get fired, or they're going to get fired. Like, it's a very similar situation. I would assume, because like we said, the first round pick could, you know, be millions of dollars in revenue for Andlauer, or could be used as an asset to go deeper into the playoffs, which includes more revenue. So it's essentially Pierre Dorion losing revenue. If you really, 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 really look into it and try and nitpick everything, so. I mean, yeah. I mean, like I said, Pierre Dorion is getting fired regardless of the end of the year, I think, or stepping down or something along those lines. I think it was mutually agreed upon that they both kind of just wanted to see the season through and help transition. I do think that GM search was underway just behind the scenes that we didn't know about, and that they were going to slowly. You probably would have seen a hire, like, oh, we hired somebody as assistant general manager again, or director of player development, and then. Like Pierre Dorion and Steve Staios would slowly pass on the wings to them, and then they would have got hired. But that's how I think it would have played out. But now it seems like it could be a bit longer process. But thank you, Pierre, for everything you've done to the organization. You've been with us forever. I think what was it, 17 years with the Sens, or 17 years in the league, anyways.
Yeah, 17 years with the Ottawa Senators.
Yeah, 17 years with the Ottawa Senators. That's a long time. Thank you for your dedication. Thank you for your passion towards the team, and you know that he always tried to make, he really did try to make the team better, and he really wanted to bring a Stanley Cup to Ottawa. It just didn't work out. So best of luck, Pierre, in your future endeavors, and go take some time off. You do deserve it.
Yeah, I think that's Alex. I think it, like, starting with that point is probably a good spot, right? Like, he, I get that he was a really polarizing GM, but I think that we all have to take a moment to take a step back and acknowledge that he wasn't really given the best circumstances, so to speak, where he had an owner who was very hands-on, didn't necessarily give him the leash that he needed. He had to work with very, very difficult parameters financially, which I think impacted his ability to be able to do his job. So I think it's important for us to acknowledge that, you know, he did the best he could, and he's from the area, and I think there's nothing that would make me think that he didn't care about this team. He didn't want this team to be successful. He has a great eye for being a scout. So I think, you know, his next job, he's probably never going to be a GM again, but he'll be a really great, you know, a head scout, or, you know, some sort of, he's going to work in the scouting department somewhere, maybe Pittsburgh, depending on how Dubas seems to role when it comes to Ottawa Senators, former Ottawa Senators. But I would say, first and foremost, thank you, Dorian, for everything you did. You did the best you could, but you had to go. And Alex, absolutely, I agree. When Ann Lauer came in, we all knew anytime with these sorts of scenarios, you will always, a new owner comes in, he wants the guys, or the people rather, that he trusts, in this case, that he trusts, he believes in, he's worked with. It happens all over business, the business world. That's why he brought in Steos, immediately brought in Steos. Everyone knew that was going to happen. We all knew that this was going to happen. You know, I agree with you, Alex. At the end of the season, he was gone, regardless of how the team did. So it's not surprising that it happened. Obviously, it was... that timeline was moved up, and here we are now earlier on in the season than I was expecting for him to go, but it's not surprising that he did. And Alex, you also pointed out that, you know, early on in the press conferences, Ann Lauer pointed out, he's like, hey, like, something that's important to me is to be best in class, but also to be accountable for what you do or what you don't do. And I think this sets the tone for what things are going to be like moving forward. This isn't just a free for all. This isn't, hey, listen, you've been with this team for X amount of time, we'll give you a do over. We'll give you a mulligan. It'll be okay. You know, no, like, you made a mistake. There has to be accountability for that. And there's nothing wrong with that. I appreciate and respect that. It's not easy. I very much respect that. And so to know that that's going to happen, that's clearly what's happening now early on, means that moving forward, this is when people ask, like, oh, the Ottawa Senators, like, what are, like, they've been a joke for as long as they, whatever, like, that's going to change. Like, we are going to be held accountable to a higher standard. And this is a perfect example of that. Like, there's no better example to say, hey, you made a mistake. You're the GM. You should have known. You're out. Sorry. It sucks. You've been here since 2007. Okay, great. Thank you for everything. And we respect you, but you got to go. You can't do this.
It's like in every other job, right? It's not just it's if you make a mistake, it's usually either the head of the department that takes the fall for it first because they're responsible for you, or you have to own accountability and you gotta go. So, I mean, it's something the Senators have been lacking a long time. It's been accountability. You know, I feel like under the Melnick era, or there's a lot. I think the last time there was really accountability was when Brian Murray was in head of general manager hockey operations. And I feel like it's just been missing. So it's refreshing to see it. It sucks to see Pierre go, but it is refreshing to see. It is refreshing to know that, you know, if a move is made that Ann Lauer doesn't agree with, or something happens that Ann Lauer doesn't agree with, that he's not afraid to fire people. He's not afraid where, you know, I hate to bash Melnick because he's not with us anymore, but Melnick was, he didn't want to fire people because he didn't want to pay them. He didn't want to pay them to not be there. Like, he's hired them, waited out. Like, Ann Lauer won't do that. Ann Lauer, you mess up, you're gone. He says, you're not getting the results, you're gone. He's not going to be afraid to do that. And you kind of got that vibe from the press conference. He's a lot more feisty than I thought. So he was firing on all cylinders in that press conference. And
yeah, feisty and transparent, which I think that we all really appreciate.
Yeah, and it's refreshing to see, and you can it's nice to know that, you know, he's only owned the team technically for a month or in a bit, and he's already kind of putting his stamp on things. Like normally when you see these transitions, it takes a while for things to change in the organization. But I think with Ann Lauer, you'll see by the end of the year, I think you'll see a whole new Ottawa Senators organization. And moving forward, it'll take some time to build the reputation up, but by 3-4 years, we'll be one of the best in class. So
there it is. Best in class.
Best in class. On that, I will say, I'll just add my little 2 cents before we look at some candidates. I think that Pierre Dorion's done a lot of good, but he's also done a lot of not so good. So a lot of his most of his tenure, I'm going to say 90% of it, was dealing with an owner that was not willing to spend to the necessity to run an actual good hockey ops department. So he had to, his only real advisor was the owner, and the owner pretended he knew hockey, but he truly didn't. So that's why a lot of the moves that were made. And that's what it is. No disrespect intended to Eugene Melnyk, but his hockey views were simply outdated, and he was trying to bring those into modern day hockey. And he got Pierre Dorion to do that. So a lot of the mistakes were directly tied to Eugene Melnyk. But a lot of the mistakes were also because he's just nobody to bounce his ideas off who actually knew what they were doing, simply put. And he's done a lot of good. He's done a lot of bad. And it's just unfortunate that he has to be let go. But it's a new era in Ottawa, and you have to move on from the Melnyk era. And then to do that, you got to let go of everybody who was associated to Melnyk. Right?
I know we're going to move on real quick here, but Pierre Dorion for the longest time had no one on top of him to hold him accountable. The whole year between Melnyk and Lauer taking over, he was hockey ops. He was the most powerful man in probably the Ottawa Senators organization. And that sounds like a bad thing, but I mean, it is. He just didn't care, not the fact that he didn't care about the team, but just like, if I make this move and it goes haywire, no one's gonna tell me otherwise. I'm gonna try it. I might as well. And then Steve Staios came in, and Ann Lauer came in, and then they were watching like a hockey. You could even see in the games, he was kind of just sitting there, and you could see Ann Lauer and like Staios just kind of hovering around him, and it was just like, oh boy, Pierre's in the hot seat for sure. But
Well, I'll finish on saying, watching Dorion has almost been like watching, you know, when Dunder Mifflin was starting to go bankrupt and he got bought by Sabre, and they had that episode where the fact checker, I'll say, was checking on Dunder Mifflin. For all the Office fans, you'll know what I'm talking about. But for non-Office fans, you won't. But just bear with me. For that little moment in time, Mike Scott was the top dog, the highest ranking employee at Dunder Mifflin.
Yep.
It was just a shit show. And that's what it's been with Pierre Dorion during his tenure with the Ottawa Senators, because he just had nobody to keep him in check, keep him accountable. And that's what ended up happening.
I just want to say one last thing on this.
Absolutely. And
remember that Dorion also was the one who was able to, you know, get Sanderson signed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Get Stützle signed, you know, traded for Chychrun, you know, get Tkachuk signed. All of the core of Josh Norris, all of the core of this team that's going to be incredible moving forward. So let's absolutely throw all of the baggage on him. But also remember again that
he
was able to fandangle something. Yes, it got us into a bit of a cap pickle, as Ann Lauer has said, but I just wanted to say once again, not to just throw everything on Dory.
Yeah.
I agree.
I will miss his press conferences. I'll say that.
Never a dull moment. Always say there's never a dull moment being an Ottawa Senators fan.
And I will miss his press conferences. Just his facial expressions and just the way he acted. I tuned into every single one just because I had to see the way he reacted to some questions. Like, he was like shook by some of them. Oh, it was great. Yeah. I'll never forget Pierre Dorion.
Forever in our hearts.
Yeah. But yeah, on piggybacking off what Chris said, Pierre Dorion is a great hockey mind. Absolutely. but a great hockey mind does not always translate to being a good manager. It's and that's the difference.
He's a good scout. So you say hockey mind, he's a great scout. He's not a great manager.
That's what I'm saying. Just because you got a great hockey mind does not make you a good manager.
To be fair, he did not have the help he needed. Or the resources he needed. He had no pro scouts. Dude. He had no analytics. He had no, like, it was Pierre Dorion. Pierre Dorion kind of just running the show by himself. I mean, that's a big job for somebody. So, I mean, I don't know if I necessarily agree that he wasn't a good manager. I think he was fine. I do think if he had a lot more help, we would have seen a lot better light in Pierre Dorion, but not his time anymore. So let's move on.
The absolute last thing I'll say now before switching it is the only people he's had to, I guess, learn from are Brian Murray, who obviously was not able to spend a lot of time with the organization because he wanted to spend his last days with his family. Daniel Alfredson, who never really had an actual opportunity to make his mark when he was around as a senior advisor. Pierre McGuire, let's not even talk about him. Trent Mann, who they hated each other. And I guess Ryan Bowness, who he hired, and I guess now Steve Staios. Six people, which just never lasted a long time.
Yeah.
So you had to actually form a hockey.
It was one of the, and it's a important topic, so I know we need to move on, but it's one of those things where I think Pierre Dorion got thrown into the fire as well. Like Brian Murray died suddenly. I mean, it wasn't suddenly, but
it was prepared, but it was sudden.
And obviously Malik didn't want to go out and hire a new GM because that would have taken a lot more money. So they hired internally, and the first thing he wanted Pierre to do was rebuild. And Pierre, I think to lead that rebuild, we should have had experience. Like Pierre was learning on the job while he was doing that rebuild, and he made mistakes. He learned from those mistakes, but he had to make mistakes to learn. And I don't necessarily agree that, you know, if we would have had a different manager at the time, things may have been different, but Pierre was learning, and he said he didn't have anybody to learn from. It was trial and error with him. He signed Derek Stepan thinking, oh, I need a veteran presence. That didn't pan out. He signed Eric Branson. Didn't pan out. Like he had to make some mistakes to learn. And I do think he was finally getting into figuring things out. But what he did and with Anne Lauer coming in, Anne Lauer needed to bring his own person in, and what he did was embarrassment to the organization, so he needed to go. But I do think he learned and finally was getting the hang of it, and it was getting a bit more aggressive and not being pushed over as much near the end. So yeah. I will give him credit on that. He had a very difficult job working under Melnick, not having the money, learning everything, learning how to be a manager, learning how to deal these trades, learning how to go through a rebuild by himself. Like he went, you could tell if you go back to 2017 when he got hired to when he got fired, his gray hairs have tripled. He's been through the ringer.
Hairline has moved back a bit.
He's been through the ringer for this organization. You could tell he was giving it his all. So I will say that. I will end on that. He gave it everything he had for this organization.
And let's take a look now at a couple candidates to eventually take a spot. So the first thing I'm just going to take literally 2 seconds to say is because it's not happening. There's people saying that Steve Staios is going to retain both president of hockey operations and general manager role. Not going to happen.
He might until the end of the season, but I don't
know. He's going to be the interim general manager while they search for a new GM. He will not be both. He's going to be the president of hockey operations.
I don't think he wants to be GM either. So
no, I don't think he wants to. He's going to consider the option because he has to consider every single option that's on the table. So he will give himself. Should I? No, I don't think I should. That's what's going to end up happening for there. But so that's the first option out of the table. That's not what's going to happen. Let's look internally really quickly. Internally.
I think Jake, before we get into this, let's give you a bit of a shout out. You did an incredible breakdown of a number of the different candidates. And I think that if you want to take a moment, you know, like celebrate yourself, you wrote an article, tell people where they can get that.
Yeah. So I've left the Fan Sided Network. I don't know if anybody knows that. And I am now working with the Belly Up Sports.com. And I'm the Ottawa Senators beat writer there. And the second that Pierre Dorion got dismissed, I basically spent the next like 6-7 hours researching every single GM candidate search for the last 3-ish years, looking at every single candidate, looking at what their resume is, why they're interviewed, stuff like that. And when I was writing, I had close to 8,000 words written down. I was like, that's way too long. So I managed to shorten it down to 1,600 words. And I've got that out for you today. I will probably link to it in the description if anybody wants to read. I'm not going to talk about every single candidate on that list because just some of them just shouldn't really be mentioned in this podcast. If you want to read more about it, I'll add it in the description. But the top ones I'll take a look at is, first of all, let's take a look internally. So the only two real options internally, I believe, are Daniel Alfredson and Ryan Bowness. I love Daniel Alfredson. We all love Daniel Alfredson. But if Daniel Alfredson were to be named the general manager of the Ottawa Senators, it would be setting up for failure, setting him up for failure, yeah, exactly how Pierre Dorion was set up for failure. He had more help, but it's not a good idea.
No.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, he's going to be probably made a senior advisor in hockey operations or an assistant general manager or something along those lines. But I don't think that a general manager job for him is in the cards quite yet.
I think he will be a GM in this league. But I think he has he's been out of hockey, kind of the NHL for a long time. And I think he just needs to get his feedback in and learn while not having that much pressure. Like, I completely agree with you. I think he'll be like a vice president or special assistant to the GM or something along those lines, or a hockey Dwight advisor. Schrute. Yeah, he'd be a Dwight Schrute, essentially. Like, it's going to be – I think he's going to soak up a lot. I think he'll be a fantastic GM. But I think, he has a long way to go. He has a long way to go before he's ready to be a general manager.
Okay. He's what I'm going to call a executive prospect at this current moment in time. He's got a lot to learn, and he will learn that. He will. Just give him time. And later on, maybe we'll see him as a general manager out of center. It's just not right at this moment in time. Let's get back to the other guy I mentioned, Ryan Bowness. Is the other option, was the other option internally. Ryan Bowness was hired, I'm going to say, a year and a half ago, not too long before the DeBrincat trade. And he was made the assistant general manager and the general manager of the Belleville Senators. He changed Belleville like that. He did a great job changing Belleville up right away. And he's done a great job advising Pierre Dorion as much as he possibly can. And he's taking a bigger workload now that Pierre Dorion's gone. And I think he's going to get a real look at, a real big look at the GM job. If he gets it, I'm not 100% sure, but he'll be one of the finalists.
See, I don't think he's being looked at all. I think, to be honest, I think he. I don't think Ann Lauer sees a future for him in Ottawa. I he's a Pierre Dorion guy that got brought in by Pierre Dorion. His philosophy is matching Pierre Dorion's. That's why he go. And when they hire a GM, the GM's gonna want to bring in his own guys that he trusts. So he might move over to the hockey advisor or player development more or a scout or something. I just personally don't see it right now, but I could see. Completely off, and if I am, I'll own it, but I just can't see it personally right now. But who knows? I've seen crazier things happen to this team, so
I think you're off. That's in no disrespect, I think you're off on this one. Just because I was looking at it, he's actually been looked at potential GM jobs in the past. When Jim Rutherford actually stepped away from the Pittsburgh Penguins, before they hired Ron Hextall and Co. and Brian Burke and all that stuff, Ryan Bowness interviewed for the GM job.
I'm not saying he's not ready to be a GM. I just think he's not going to be with the Ottawa Senators as the GM. I do think Ann Lauer has his guy in mind, and either A, he's waiting for the OHL season to end or for the NHL season to end, or waiting to have these interviews. And I think he's already knows who the next general manager is going to be. That's my personal belief. I just know how Ann Lauer operates, and he's not a guy that will just go in there. He's calculated all this. You know, he's excited to own the team. He's probably already planned the next 3 years out in his head. Like, that's the way he operated in Hamilton. That's the way he operated in Brantford. And I think he already has a candidate in mind. And I don't think it's Ryan Bowness. But if you're, again, I don't want to discredit you. I mean, this is what the podcast is for, right? To go back and forth.
Exactly.
And,
yeah.
If you're right, good job. If I'm wrong, I will completely own up to it. But I think by the end of the year, you'll see Bonus move on to another role somewhere in another team. We'll see. Chris, what's your opinion? Jake and I have been going back and forth.
No, I love, I just wanted to watch to see how this played out. I actually kind of fall in between a little bit. I would say I would love to see Bonus take on the GM role. I don't think he will. I do think he stays on in the organization, but I see him being someone that he will be looked at as a candidate, but he won't make it. He likely won't make it to the final round. And then, but I would like to see him stay on. I've loved what he did in Belleville. Obviously, I do a lot of, I follow Belleville pretty closely. I like their moves. I like the way that they've structured their team. And so I could see him continuing in that space. But he, to your point, Alex, like he's Ann Lauer already knows who he wants in that space. It's just a matter of making sure that he plays it out the way that he's supposed to. And he makes it as fair and as all encompassing as possible, looking at all of his options, but he already knows who he wants. And we'll get to, at least from my perspective, I already know.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And it is a guy on Jake's list. I will say that.
So
I was literally going to add to that. So I was going to add in a bunch. I think at the end of the day, you're probably right. And Lauer probably has his number one guy. But to be best in class, you have to look at every single option on the table. So I think what's going to end up happening is the team is going to end up interviewing at least 10, maybe 20, maybe even 30 candidates, and then will wade their way down from there. I think the final candidates will be a pool of three guys. And I think those final three guys are going to be Mathieu Dash, Eric Tulski, and Ryan Bonus. I know you don't agree with that, Alex, but I really, really think that Ryan Bonus has grown on Michael Ann Lauer simply based on the fact that Ryan Bonus was at tonight's game and he was seen talking to Ann Lauer a lot throughout the game. If you look back on the footage of the game, like they were actually actively chatting. So he's definitely going to be considered, and maybe he doesn't get the final job, but he's definitely going to be considered for a role. But other options.
I agree on two of those three. I think Darsh is my guy. I think Mathieu Darsh is the guy who ends up getting the role. And Lauer was very high on him in Montreal before he landed on Hughes. I think Darsh is number one number one candidate.
I'm probably okay with Darsh. I think Tulski is the guy.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'll explain later, but I'll let Jake finish what he wants to say, and then I'll explain my reason and why I think Tulski's the guy. But go ahead, Jake.
I think that Darsh, it's his cap management. He's done an incredible job in Tampa Bay. I just think that learning from Brisebois, but also having his prior experiences, I think that's one of the things when you look at how we're going to manage the cap moving forward, the fact that now we're a cap team. You want somebody who has that foresight, who's being able to look at things in a very, very unique way, very creative with the cap space. I think that's why Darsh, and obviously prior experiences and prior conversations and the interviews with him and Lauer went really, really well, according to reports. That's why I think he would be a great fit. But I do agree with you, Alex, that like, Tulski would be, I would be totally fine with either one of those being the next GM.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead, Jake.
Yeah. See, my thing is, I think those three are the final three. I know that you guys aren't as high on Bonus as I am. I just, based on what I've seen tonight, he probably doesn't end up getting the job, but he definitely is one of those three. But what my pick personally is Mathieu Dash. That's who I would pick. Eric Tulski, I really like Eric Tulski, but the one thing that I'm a little bit worried about Tulski is he's analytics-based, and that's not a problem. Analytics are very, very, very important. But if you build a team only based on analytics, that's a problem. So I think that analytics guy should be more of like an assistant general manager instead of the top guy calling the shots. That's my opinion on that. And that's also probably why he hasn't gotten any other jobs yet, because he's interviewed in places like Florida. He's interviewed in places like Chicago. He interviewed in Montreal. He's interviewed for so many different spots. And as great of a hockey mind he is, he might not have the ability to be able to use hockey and analytics as a tool of many. Because every guy's got their strengths. Everybody's got their weaknesses. Mathieu Dash's biggest strength is his salary cap knowledge, his CBA knowledge, and all those things. And Eric Telsky's biggest asset is his analytics. But Eric Telsky's biggest weakness is prioritizing analytics over other tools. I like analytics. I really, really do. But it should not be the only tool you use. And that's why I take Matthew Dash over Eric Telsky.
Okay. I mean, I would love Matthew Dash as well. But I, the only reason I think Eric Telsky is he's the next guru or next big thing in the league. And Ann Lauer, it's best in class. Like, Ann Lauer wants to go out and get the next big shiny thing, make a splash right out of the gate. And I agree with you that I don't know how I feel about his analytics. Everybody knows me. I'm a scout. I like analytics, but I hate analytics at the same time because you gotta have both. So I completely agree with that. I just think that Ann Lauer sees Tulsky as I think Ann Lauer sees Tulsky as the big prize in the pool, and he's gonna go out and get it. And I don't know, like. That's honestly the only reason why I think that's it. I do think Matthew Darche is a better fit for our team. I 100% agree with that. I don't know. Ann Lauer just I know how he operates, and he just seems like he goes after the shiny toys. And and he will bring somebody in if he does go Tulsky. He will bring somebody in to help. Like maybe that's where Peter Chiarelli comes in, like the old mind or whatever, that kind of help him steer away from analytics a little bit. But yeah, no, I'll leave it at that.
Think too.
Yeah,
I think what's going to end up happening, based on all the research I've done and all the guys that are available, I think the most logical decision to do is have Steve Staels obviously be his president of hockey operations, have either Telsky, either Dash, either Bonus as your general manager, then have a vice president of hockey operations who has more experience in the league, not necessarily as a general manager, but who's been with multiple teams, maybe has a general manager spot, has won a cup, all these other pieces, either as a player, as a manager, or whatever, as a kind of a buffer to mentor both Staels and whoever the GM is. Because Staels is a great hockey mind, but this is his second season as an executive in the NHL. He's got to learn. And for that, the guys I've pinpointed for that mainly are either Peter Chiarelli, who I'd rather not him. Another guy who I'm looking at is Jason Botterill, who's had a lot of experience in Buffalo, Pittsburgh, and now Seattle. Another guy to look at is Scott Mellenby, who has the relationship with Michael Ann Lauer, having been the assistant general manager in Montreal. And I believe that Michael Ann Lauer does like Mellenby.
I also would be shocked if Mellenby's in the candidate running for GM. Like he was close to getting a couple jobs this summer, and he's like you said, he's an incredible hockey mind. Like he wasn't that good of a player, but I 100% agree with you, and that's fantastic work by you to do that research. Like that's top notch research on that one.
Yeah, I agree.
Because Mellenby interviewed in Chicago. He interviewed in Montreal for the job, and didn't end up getting it.
I think Vancouver,
in Florida, Vancouver. He ended up interviewing in San Jose as well. So that's five places in the last year that he's interviewed, and there's places before.
Yeah.
So there's so many guys, so many teams who like Mellenby, and he's a really, really good thing. And he's been in multiple teams. He's now a senior hockey advisor in St. Louis. He's learning from Peter Chiarelli. He's learning from Craig Berube.
Doug Armstrong.
Doug Armstrong. Sorry, I mixed the two names up. General manager, coach. He's worked with multiple teams. And that's what I kind of prioritized when I was looking at this list. So if one guy's been with one team for forever, he has one point of view, that one team's point of view. But if you look at Peter Chiarelli, who's been with Edmonton, Boston, St. Louis, and even Ottawa, that's four teams that he's been with. All these different point of views that he can use to mentor these guys.
You also got to think, and not only people think about this, but you also got to think about the connections. Like the connections in the hockey world are super important. And, you know, bringing, I'm all for bringing a fresh mind in and a forward thinker. And I think that's what the Ottawa Senators need to move forward. I do think bringing someone in with a lot of connections to help that, like whether it's Tulsky, whether it's Darche, whether it's Mellenby, Chiarelli has these connections. Connections are super important in the world, right? Like yeah, like if you can't get a deal done with the general manager, you're like, well, here's Peter. Peter will, Chiarelli will kind of talk to him, be like, listen, I know you, I know what you want. Like, let's talk. Like it's just very important in the hockey world is the connection. So, I'm not opposed to Chiarelli. I don't want him as general manager. I do think he's better off in a vice president of hockey operations role. I 100% agree with you there. He's an incredible hockey mind. I don't know. He's not the greatest manager. He doesn't have a great track record, but he is someone that I think is willing to learn and get out of his old school mindset and willing to learn the way, like be fast forward a little, like forward thinking a little bit. So that, I'm good with all of the people on the list, in my opinion. I think he did a great job. And though I think all those guys I'd be very happy with regardless of who they decide. Bonus is the only guy I'm iffy on, but Bonus is a forward thinker. He's someone that's, he will be a general manager in the NHL Hockey League. I just don't, anyways, I've already talked about, I do think all those guys, I think every single one of those guys you listed are what the Ottawa Senators need. I do think they're a forward thinker that needs to look at the game differently than how we're looking at it. Cause Ottawa is kind of, they're a way more modern team than they were. And we'll talk about DJ Smith in another episode, but
yeah, that'll be to come.
I do think DJ Smith's style is outdated right now. I do think it's built on grinding and physicality, and our team is not built for that. Our team is way too skilled, and I think you need a forward thinker to help put the right guys in the right places and not just get fourth line grinders for every single line and grind your way to victory almost per se. I think that's the old NHL. I think we need guys to slot in that see that. So, yeah.
That's fair. Another guy who's definitely – the last guy I'm going to mention here, one guy who's definitely going to get an interview – 100% Jason Spezza. He's not going to get the job because he's not going to want to leave Pittsburgh. He's not going to want to leave Kyle Dubas. He really likes Kyle Dubas, but he's going to interview for the job just to see the interview. I think he takes the job.
I disagree. I don't see him coming at all. There's no chance.
The only time
we'll see Jason Spezza in the CTC is going to be outside of a game. Is going to be when he gets inducted into the Ring of Honor. He's not going to be interviewed. I just think that he and Dubas.
Elliot Friedman's already said. It's either Elliot Friedman or Bruce Garrett that Jason Spezza is an early candidate.
Yeah, he's an early. He can be an early candidate, but it doesn't mean that he's actually going to be contacted. I don't think he's not ready for that space. He's a great hockey mind. He will always be. Like when you think about Jason Spezza, like he gets the game, he knows the game, he has a ton of connections. I think there's a lot of groundwork for why he would be a good GM, but he's not going to be, I don't think he's the forward thinker that Ann Lauer wants. I think that he wants someone different than a Jason Spezza. I just can't imagine Jason Spezza being the next GM of the Ottawa Senators. I think there's also, to be honest, there's also a little bit too much baggage that comes with that.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's still some hard feelings there for Spezza, and I think it'll be like Elfie. He'll need some time away from the team and just kind of reset.
Which is why I think that he the next time we see him is going to be Ring of Honor. I think that's the next time we'll see him. I appreciate the, not to dismiss your thought process.
Yeah, agree.
I would say that's like a far off. If this was 5 years from now, sure, maybe. But this is—it's way too. It's not the right time for Spezza to be a GM at all. But to be a GM in Ottawa,
that's fair. And I know I said I was good. As the last name I was going to. I was just looking over again. Another guy who's probably not going to get a lot of look at, but I think he's really, really interesting. Again, with the Tampa Bay Lightning, is Jamie Brashear. He's currently the assistant general manager, and he's been with the Lightning since 2011. So he was basically brought in when Steve Yzerman was brought in, and he was his original right-hand man before Julien Brisebois came around, and he was the team's director of pro scouting before being named the AGM. He was the guy who advocated for guys like Blake Coleman, Barclay Goodrow, guys like Nick Paul, all these people that the Tampa Bay Lightning brought in were recommendations by Jamie Brashear. He knows hockey very, very well. So I think that's another guy that should be considered, but I don't think he's fully ready yet.
I think at the end of the day, personally, what I like to see is a GM that hasn't been a GM yet. I think... bring an old, like, being the, I think Ottawa needs to get rid of that old boys club and bring a fresh mind who has been in the league, because you need experience in the league, but someone that's kind of behind the scenes, like you said, with all the guys you listed are all behind the scenes. And I think Ottawa needs someone like that right now to kind of steer the direction and then get away from that old school mentality. So that's
100%.
Yeah.
But also, don't hire the cheapest guy available. No. Hire the right candidate.
And Lauer won't hire the cheapest guy. He's gonna go. He's gonna do his due diligence. I guarantee you, four or five times he'll go through guys' records and probably contact guys four or five times as well. Like he's gonna make sure he gets the right guy for the job. He doesn't like making mistakes. And he has a track record of bringing in guys that work really well. And I think the next guy we'll see will be pleasantly, it'll be a name we don't hear of, that we haven't heard of very often, that kind of the background, like a Matthew Darche or like a Scott Mellenby, that you know that exists, but you don't hear their names in the forefront of everything because they're working behind the scenes. I think that's the name you'll hear, and some of us might go, who? Like, it'll be someone like that.
Yeah, which is why I think all the more reason why it won't happen until the end of the, like, it'll be next summer before we actually have that, as they go through the candidates. But absolutely, there are a lot of conversations out there right now where it's, you know, let's get some fresh perspectives, no previous GM experience, but like have the right mindset, forward thinking. That's Ann Lauer. And I think that's part of the, like, you've seen that now with Steve Staios, and sort of, you know, when you watch their press conferences, you get that sort of vibe, that sort of perspective, that they're not looking at what happened, like what has been, but what will be. And I think that's something that we need to be looking for. Like, we can't expect it to be, like, when Shirelli's name came out there, obviously everyone, there were a number of different perspectives on that. But I think that's one of those examples of, that's not something that Ann Lauer would ever do. He's going to be looking at someone who's an up and comer, like you said, forward thinker, who actually, like, who gets the current NHL, not someone who used to be in the NHL. The NHL has changed over the years, and who is going to be very aggressive, very progressive, very analytical, can look at a bigger picture, and who has established themselves as someone who can manage the cap really, really creatively. That's the kind of mind that I would see that we're going to be looking for. And to your point, Alex, we're not going to be one of those names where it's like the Ken Hollins or the Peter that we're used to hearing as a GM. And I think that might lower the excitement level, because we're saying, who is this person? But no, again, this is best in class is something we all have to keep in mind. It's it's going to become so cliched, but it's best in class. That's what we need to be looking at. And it doesn't matter about money.
And you look at Hamilton and why they were so successful in the OHL. They started the trends of how, like they were like 2-3 years ahead of teams in terms of developing players and changing the kind of changing game plans and whatnot. And so I think, and that's very Ann Lauer-esque, because he I guarantee you, him and Staios have already sat down and be like, okay, what in 3 years, what is the league going to look like? Based on the current trend, based on how things are going. And that's exactly what's going to happen. That's exactly what he did in the OHL. That's why they were so successful. And that's why, you know, they did a rebuild for 1 year and they were ready to go again, because they knew the trend. They knew the right guys to bring in. Like, it's hard to explain to Sens fans. As someone who's worked in the OHL, it's very hard to explain to Sens fans how good Hamilton is, how best in class they were. Like, people look at the London Knights and Kitchener. Yeah, like, people look at the Kitchener Rangers and London Knights as best in class in the OHL. Hamilton was there for a long time, and that is Dan Lauer's is. Doing. Yeah. Not so much anymore. The move to Brantford, they lost a lot, but they don't have the same facilities, they don't have the same arena. But Brantford, they went from an 18,000 seat building to a 3,000 seat building. So there's still a lot of work there to be done in Brantford. But I guarantee you, they will be better than half the league in 3-4 years of Dan Lauer keeps ownership. Like. No. It's hard, really hard to explain unless you've seen it up close, how quickly Hamilton became a threat in the OHL year after year after year after year. And that's just the Ann Lauer way. He's always wanted to be better. He doesn't settle for anything less than the best of the best. So We are in good hands with Ann Lauer and everything he says. You just need to trust. You need to trust him. You know he's you. It might not seem right now, but in 2-3 years, you'd be like, okay, we got like we did this because like it's a long term game with him, and he's always gonna be a step ahead of gonna try to be a step ahead of all the other teams. So just trust. Just trust. That's all I gotta say.
Amen. Mm-hmm. Amen.
And we're back. We just took a little break there, but we're back now. We're going to talk a little bit about around the hockey world. We're not going to talk about it too much because there's just not too much to add. Everybody's talked about it. We don't want to add perspective when we don't necessarily know everything that's going on. But over the last weekend in a British hockey league, I forget the name, the Elite Hockey League, sorry.
EIHL,
yes. Adam Johnson of the Nottingham Panthers unfortunately lost his life after a freak accident on the ice involving defenseman Matt Petgrave. It's a very, very unfortunate thing that happened, and it's sparked up a lot of debate when it comes to equipment, and it sparked up a lot of debate, fortunately, about racism online. I'm not going to get into the exact specifics of what exactly happened, because at this point, everybody knows. And if you don't know, it's because you don't want to know. So the specifics is simply that Adam Johnson, unfortunately, lost his life. He's a former NHLer, undrafted, made his way up to the NHL, scored one goal in the NHL, and the unfortunate accident happened, and I feel for Adam and his family and all his people around him. I feel for Matt Petgrave, who was unfortunately the other player involved in this freak accident. And it's just not intentional play. What I seen happened is it's a weird play that probably could have been avoided, but it was not intentional in any way, shape, or form. So that's my thoughts on that. And people are being racist about the guy and on online. And it's very sickening to see, because if you really wake up and if you really think that someone's going to wake up and say, you know what, I'm going to kill someone on the ice today, then you're wrong. You're a matter of fact, you're wrong. And there's not much I also have to say about that. Does anybody else have any thoughts? What about you, Chris?
Just in general, or specific to what you're saying right now?
Specific to the whole situation. We'll talk about equipment afterwards, though.
Okay. Yeah. Obviously, it was at the end of the day, like, this is one of those plays that I actually I did myself a favor by not actually watching the play. I only heard about it because I've heard that it was not something that you necessarily want to watch. At the end of the day, it was a harmless play. I heard the description of the play. Sure. You know, Jake, I think you're right. Like it was definitely, you know, there was a moment in which you could argue that it probably was an unnecessary, read defensively on that forward. But it sucks at the end of the day, like, man, there's no, what superlative could you use to say, to describe what you're thinking after you see that happen and after everything that transpired since then? It's tough. That's it was an accident. He didn't mean to do it. It sucks that Adam lost his life. I can only imagine how difficult this is for his family, for his friends, for his teammates. You know, I saw the tribute that happened afterwards where they, you know, they put his jersey at center ice and they all came out. They made him the first star. They all came out and they kind of tapped his jersey. You know, this has changed, and we're going to get into it in a moment. And I'll wrap up by just saying that these are the moments that it's really, really difficult to see this sort of thing happen, but these are the moments that it brings. We recognize and realize how much hockey can bring us, and hockey can unite us. And hockey we need to remember that, and not think about the fact that this was an intentional act or something like that. This is hockey unites us, and it's moments like this that emphasize that.
Yeah. yeah, my thoughts, obviously, thoughts and prayers are with Adam's family and everyone affected, the fans included who were there and had to witness that. Yeah, it's obviously not a great, and Matt Pettigrew's family as well. The harassment he's getting online is completely uncalled for. It's a hockey play at the end of the day. It may have been avoided, but it's a part of the game. Everybody that has not played hockey or that wasn't there should shut their mouth. The game moves at such a fast speed that if you slow it down, everything's going to look intentional if you slow it down. But the game moves at such a fast speed that this happened in a blink of an eye. And if Matt Pekarev is a veteran, he's played a lot of hockey in his career. There's no way he went out, like Jake said, when I was like, I'm going to kill this guy today. There's absolutely no way that would happen. So people just need to shut their mouths and just let the family mourn, let Matt mourn, let everybody affected just kind of deal with it in their own way and just stop trying to get involved in the incident and trying to make it about you because it's not about you.
No, exactly.
Amen.
Yeah, and that's all I got to say is it's a freak accident and it's unfortunate it happened. So, like, Chris, you did a good job not watching the video. It's bad.
It made its way on my timeline, and I regret watching it. I've seen a lot of unfortunate things throughout my life so far, and that easily ranks top five.
Something
if not higher.
Yeah,
it's a very unfortunate thing that nobody should have to see, and it's just, it sucks. Simply put, it sucks, and it sucks that it happened. It sucks that it happened in general. I hate how people are trying to paint a racial motivated picture of it, because that's not what it is. Like Alex said, the game moves so fast. What likely happened, I'm no expert on this, but what likely happened from what I've seen is the defenseman was trying to go around a player to lay a clean hit, but he didn't see another player coming, kind of hip check him, and that's where his leg shot back. That's what I think happened.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't there, so I can't talk on the play, but someone write down, that's what it looks like. But again, game is so fast.
Game is so fast.
People just need to let the people that need to mourn and stop trying to get involved in every scenario and making a cause for it. Like, there's absolutely no reason.
I always try to stay super positive especially when it comes to hockey and the world that we live in right now. But I would say, in this case, I'm going to put my foot down and I'm going to absolutely agree with you, Alex, and say people need to shut up.
Yeah.
Shut their mouths.
Just be quiet.
Because as someone who's suffered loss, I can tell you the last thing you need is someone assessing why this shouldn't have happened. You know, this was intentional. That's absolutely not the case. This was such a freak play. But I think this is a great transition for us to talk about what it means to look at that equipment and to look at to look at what equipment could be implemented to be able to provide safety for these players, because we saw visors, helmets weren't a thing. And then they became a thing, and then people getting, still would get sticks in the eyes and all that sort of stuff.
Pretty good check most recently.
Absolutely. And you started seeing visors. And then now, is this something that will help protect the player, but also help to protect that player's family and that player's, friends and teammates? It's a bigger thing than this racial, whatever it is that people are portraying it as. So I throw it back to you folks, or you guys, like, where are you at for that kind of thing?
So, Jake, do you want to take this or do you want me to go?
So I'll keep it very matter of fact. When it comes to a lot of hockey leagues throughout the world, most hockey leagues do not have a player union. So most leagues are able to just clearly implement things right away. But when there is a CBA, and when the CBA governs part like equipment, everything has to be agreed to by the player union. This means that the NHL has to sit down with representatives of the NHLPA, and they have to suggest these changes. And the NHLPA cannot say yes, cannot say no, until they pass a vote through their union body members. So all the members of the NHLPA will get a chance to vote on this. Only then will we see either yes, neck guards are going to be implemented, or no, neck guards are not going to be implemented. But what the NHL can do is strongly recommend it. And I believe that's what's already happened.
Yeah. Well, the WHL most recently recently yes. announced they made it mandatory. But that, again, that's a different beast. I struggle with this one because they're in the NHL, they are grown adults. They can make their own choices. And I do think, you know, making it mandatory. Yeah. I mean, we're all for safety, but I do think there has to be a way to find a better, how would I say it? Like the equipment has to be better. Like a neck guard's fine, but I do think there has to be a way where the players can wear it a bit more comfortably, and
there are
there definitely is, but there's definitely a lot of ways to go too. Like that's probably like the least after that's probably the most like the least thought of piece of equipment in hockey right now. I mean, now it's probably top of mind, but when we played, no one wore a neck guard because it was so uncomfortable. It was hard to move, and you know the older guys in the NHL are like, "Well, I played 30 years, never happened to me. I'm not going to wear it." So I think it will be mandatory eventually, and I do think. But I think it'll be like helmets. There'll be grandfathered players that come in. I think going forward, the new guys that get drafted, or like Connor Bedard or the McDavids, like the younger guys are going to have to wear them. I just think the older guys, you can't force them to wear that they haven't worn for 30 years. Exactly. Type thing.
What's likely going to end up happening is, like you said, it's going to be the grandfather process. I don't know the exact age on that. Sorry for cutting you in, or I just think we're a little short on time here. But what's going to end up happening is players are going to have backlash, yes, but it's not because they don't want to not wear it. It's that they want to have the choice to it. And when it comes to equipment that are currently, a lot of it is uncomfortable. It's technology evolves over time. The current helmet that is worn today is not what was the first helmet ever worn. So over time, technology will evolve. Right now, you see the big old things, I call them the big old scarves. You have that a lot of people wear. You have Kevlar. You got so many different things that are possible. And I agree, and on the sense that everybody should have their own choice when it comes to protecting themselves. But at the same time, it's so dangerous.
Like, yeah, I agree. Like, listen, I'm all for player safety. I'm all for making the game safer. I'm all for that. If it was up to me, I'd make it mandatory. I would make it absolutely mandatory for if I was the general manager or Jared Bettman, I'd make it mandatory for everybody in the league. And if I was the owners, why wouldn't I? I can protect my assets. Like, I hate to refer to the players as assets, but you know what I mean? Like, if it was up to me, but I just know that some players will fight back because it's been like that with the helmets too, so...
Yeah, I would say at least so my last point on this is and maybe it's because it hits the organization a little bit closer to home, but the Pittsburgh Penguins, with whom Adam Johnson actually played, I think it was 15 to 20 games or something like that. They actually there were some photos that were released today where like players like Erik Karlsson and a number of the other ones were actually using the neck guards in warm-up. So I would say that's probably where we're gonna start to see it as they get used to wearing it in warm-up. Yeah. And maybe it's warm-up, and then we start to see it in actual. Not warm-ups. That was actually
practice.
We'll start to see it there more consistently, I think. And then and even Erik Karlsson said, like, you know, he'll try to play around with it and see how it goes. And I would say once you start to see those, and this is something I had actually tweeted out earlier, where it was once you start to see an Erik Karlsson use it and Erik Karlsson be okay with doing it, I think that's also going to help to project this sort of positive. Because I think you're right. At the end of the day, like, players are players, and they're going to, you know, I think it could be a matter of, you know, does this make me look stupid? Is it also a functional thing?
Very superstitious too.
Yeah, exactly. And all those sorts of things. So I think you're going to start to see it being layered in where players are going to see that their players now are really smart, where they can see down the line, right? Hey, this is something that's going to probably be introduced as a rule. Why don't I get ahead of it and start using it in, you know, maybe it is a warm-up. I use it in a warm-up, or I do it in a practice, or whatever it is. I include this now so that I can get used to how it feels. And then, Jake, to your point, it's only going to get, like, this is the worst at this moment right now, this is the worst those neck guards are ever going to be. It's only going to get better. So then at some point, it's going to be great. And you're probably not even going to really notice that it's there. And then at that point, I think, so players are going to be forward thinking in that. But I think this is definitely something that has highlighted an important aspect for them where they're thinking about themselves. They're thinking about their careers. They're thinking about their families. Like, it's not just, you know, players are thinking about those things when it comes to contracts. But players are going to think about that in terms of like, whoa, this thing actually can happen. Like, I didn't think I wear a visor because I want to protect my eyes. Well, this actually happened to someone. I got to protect my neck. This is something that could actually impact myself, my career, my family, my friends, all that sort of thing. So, yeah.
And I think eventually you'll get to the point where like the WHL implements neck guard mandatory, then the OHL will do it, then the QMJHL will do it, then all the guys who've played there will already be used to playing with neck guards, and they'll slowly move up to the NHL, and then it won't be an issue.
I agree 100%.
That's what's going to happen, and it should happen. I mean, it's a pretty, as we've seen, it's a pretty important part of your body, then you don't want to get that sliced open. So
yeah, I agree.
And to end off, I think it's very appropriate to end off with the quote from none other than Eric Carlson that Chris, you brought up. I have it in front of me here, just to end off, because I think we've all said what we have to say, unless you guys have anything to add.
No,
outside of again just establishing like condolences to the to his family and his friends and everyone that you know he's impacted throughout his career. This is really difficult time. So I think it's important to do that and to say, absolutely, I'm on board with this has to be mandatory.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. All right. We'll end off on this. We're going to end off the podcast. So thank you guys very much for listening. And we're going to end off on this quote from Eric Carlson. Just trying it out. It's available for us. The magnitude of the situation unfortunately happened puts a lot of things in perspective. I think we all have families and friends. We do this because we love to do this and we get paid well to do it and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, we do it because it's a choice. I don't think anyone would keep doing it if it meant risking your life every day going out there. If you can wear a small piece of equipment to hopefully prevent something like that happening again, I think that's a win. We're going to try it out for the foreseeable future and see if we can wear it regularly. I hope I can. I hope more and more guys try to do the same at least. On that note, thank you very much for listening. This has been another edition of the Talking Some Senators podcast. We will see you next episode.